I'm Stacy, the new age old school mom.
I'm Jean, the feisty feminist.
And I'm Erin, the geeky gal pal.
Stacy, the political princess, isn't with us tonight because she went to go see Star Wars.
May the force be with her.
So her and Erin can talk about it for 45 minutes on the next episode.
I can't wait.
I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
I'm already sick next week for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I need a week off.
I mean, you guys, all right, it'll just be Stacy and me.
Perfect. Get it out of your system. You could do a special right. Star Wars episode. No one wants to hear
that. Oh my God, do not tempt me.
And we'll also talk about The Mandalorian.
You want. It's your podcast.
I mean, is it?
Yeah. Well, sober Erin, like it's your podcast. We'll revoke it from you when you get too drunk.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't argue with you about that.
All right, tonight I'm drinking Arias. It's a Pinot Noir 2017 California. And I had purchased this. BevMo has their buy one wine, get the next one for 5 cent sale. So ooh. I got this because I normally wouldn't pay $28 for wine. But I figured I was paying $14 and getting two bottles because of the 5 cent sale. So it's delicious. I love it. Whenever there's the deal like that, I want to always have it. So.
Do other states have BevMo, or is that a California thing?
I don't
thing?
Know. Maybe. Do other states have BevMo?
It's like beverages and more, but they shorten it to BevMo.
No.
Huh.
I've never heard of a buy one, get one sale on wine in Connecticut. I have never heard that.
We have to pay 5 cents because of the CRV tax.
Even that. I mean, I would pay 5 cents all day for a bottle of wine, and I've never seen it in Connecticut.
That's the only time of year I buy, like, more expensive wine because I feel like I'm paying, you know, half price for it.
It's
so.
A California that thing because the wine, like, runneth over.
It yeah.
comes out of the water mountains.
Oh, the problems
are comes out of water.
How travel.
Why have I not moved there?
I don't know.
It's a great question.
I've been sick for, like, ever, so I'm drinking Fireball on ice because that's the only thing that seems to, like, make my cough stop for a little while.
Man.
Yep.
Okay.
I got to try that next time.
I am also drinking a Pinot Noir. This one is called Pepperwood Grove, and it's the groovy green bottle. This was a Christmas gift that I got, and it looks like it is from Central Chile. And I'll have to get back to you on that because I'm not sure that I'm a big Pinot Noir fan for sipping, but we'll see how it goes.
What else would you do? What else would you guzzle it, like snort it? I don't.
No, like some like this, I would have like. No, I feel like this particular Pinot Noir, I need a nice big. Fat steak dinner to go with it.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
It's one of those. Like, if I'm just sitting here just drinking, I usually favor a red blend. But we'll see how it goes.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time Bueno tried to do Power Hour with champagne?
Ugh.
No. Ew.
It didn't
that
end
sounds
well.
Like power migraine.
Oh, God. Yeah. Power migraine. That's hilarious. Well, I am not drinking potato wine today. Thank you very much. I'm actually drinking a rosé. It's called Butternut. It's from Napa.
You better not.
And and then, yeah, it's good. I like it so far. It says watermelon, citrus, pale florals. I honestly taste the watermelon. Absolutely. I'm 100% digging it. It's good. I'm very happy right now.
Well, don't you usually drink watermelon absolute? So I could see why you'd be drinking that. And dating it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. So since it's our it's our last podcast of 2019, who else is ready to watch this just
good
die?
Night.
Yeah.
Me.
I feel like I say that every year. Like,
I know. Yeah. Right? Like the older I get, the more excited I am for the next year, which is probably going to be a shit show as well. But God, this year can kiss my ass.
Hey,
I look at it. I want the decade that America voted for Donald Trump to be gone. I want it to be an ugly stain on our history. I don't want to live it anymore. I want to be out of it.
Right.
Well, hopefully we rectify that in 2020.
That is what I'm counting on.
So that actually brings us into our first listener question. And we're doing 5 on here. I got 3 more. We'll get to you guys in 2020. these just kind of covered a range of topics. So Millie wanted to know, they say there's more Democrats than Republicans in the country. So why can't we just worry about the Democrats the way the GOP only worries about their people? Why are we always worried about pleasing everyone? So the answer to that, Millie, is the Electoral College. So, yeah, there's by number more Democrats than Republicans in this country, but that is not the way we elect presidents. We elect them through the Electoral College. And unfortunately, the way that the maps are made out, the higher populated areas tend to lean more Democratic, where the more sparse and rural areas lean more towards the GOP. So the GOP, they're pretty much pandering to one demographic too. So it's 80% white male, no college education, and it's about 60% white female, no college education. I don't know why, I've said it on here before, they break it up into no college education. I don't think that matters. I don't think having a college degree necessarily makes you that smart. So it just means that you finish something. But it's, so they have one group or one type of people that they are trying to attract or trying to excite or trying to scare or trying to get to come to the voting booth that day. The Democrats, on the other hand, have a huge umbrella that they have to keep everyone under, all the way from Bernie supporters to, you know, I can't think of his name right now, but the governor of Montana is a Democrat. So that's a really wide range of political leaning people, from super progressive to rather moderate Democrats. Also, the base is always going to support their candidate. So the base of the Democratic Party, which we continue to largely ignore, is African-American women. And then the base of the Republican Party, their bases tend to come out. Who everyone's trying to win over is actually the independent voters. That's who decides elections, unfortunately, the way the Electoral College is set up. So the Democrats have to be concerned about making everyone happy, because we have a lot more everyone's in the Democratic Party than the GOP does. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have a different one.
Well, I totally agree with what you said. And the only thing that I would like to add, actually two things. One is that when it comes to worrying about other groups, we are all Americans. We are all fighting essentially the same battle, who are in the 99 percentile. And it's the 1% that basically tries to separate us. And so I think that moderate Democrats are just more inclusive anyway, that even though there are people down south, there are people in the Bible Belt, there are people who are usually Republican voters, Democrats basically still care about how those people live their lives, because for some odd reason, most of those people are barely middle class. You know, a lot of them are working class. They're lower middle class. For some reason, they vote against their own self-interests when they vote Republican, because Republicans have historically been on upper middle class to rich. So that boggles my mind. But I think that just in general, Democrats tend to care more about just people in general, as opposed to dividing and conquering. That's just my theory. And also, I tend to disagree a little bit, Jackie, with you on the college education deal. Yes, I mean, when it comes right down to it, it just proves that you were able to finish something. But I think differently. I think more expansively after having gone through the rigors of bachelor's and master's degrees than I would have before. I think that college should teach people not what to think, but teach them how to think in a variety of ways. And, you know, if you were raised one way, if you go to college and you come back 4 years later, you are far more likely to be more open to other viewpoints than just the way you were raised on. Whereas if, you know, you graduate high school and you go right out into the workforce, It has nothing to do with you being intelligent or being not intelligent. What college does is it helps open the lines of thinking, therefore the lines of communication. That's what I feel. And it certainly does not mean anybody is smarter than anybody else for going to college. It's just how you learn to think when you're going through your whatever your program is.
I think that's an excellent point. We were actually talking about that, Stacey, Kai, and I the other night, that college, a lot like the military, because we were discussing why it's like a Republican talking point that college is such it's turning out liberal thinkers, like it's turning out progressives, which is why so many GOP members think that, you know, college is a liberal endeavor run by the left, the deep state. And
of
I was
course
saying,
they
I
think that.
Well, I was saying it's a lot like the military in the sense that it's a good equalizer. You are exposed to people that you have never been exposed to. You're exposed to ways of thinking that you've never been exposed to. And for the first time, you're kind of on your own. You're not going home every night and discussing things with the people that are in your constant circle who probably think a lot like you. So I think you're 100% right. I never thought of it that way, that's why they use college educated versus not college educated. I always thought it was a little insulting to be like, they're not smart enough, kind of, where I think that's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Yeah, I completely agree with you, Gene. And I also think that when it comes down to like college educated versus not college educated, like a lot of times I feel that that not only like you went to college, so your mind is opened up to all these different things, but I think you're more apt to even if like it, like in the military as well, like you're more apt to be friends with people that are not your norm, quote unquote, your norm. Like you are friends with a much wider variety of people, and you are way more open to discussing things on like a platform that doesn't end in like a fist fight or, you know, hit this or that. I think it really helps people to see that their viewpoint from, you know, XYZ small town, Indiana is not the only one that exists.
Right.
You have anything to add? Okay.
And I also agree that the military is like a college equivalent in terms of expanding somebody's thinking and expanding their viewpoints and their ability to accept other viewpoints. Because in the military, probably even more so than college, you will have to problem solve. And you will have to do it a lot of times with people you may not know well, you may not even like, but you will have to problem solve in certain situations. And that opens up people to being able to work together, whether they agree or whether they like each other or not.
I think it's like totally off topic. Like, I feel like we like made a really sharp left turn off the topic of what her question was, but it's totally true. Like my husband was saying, like growing up in Washington, he didn't have like a diverse, you know, like collection of people in high school. So when he joined the military, he was like, oh, I've never met, you know, a Filipino person, or I only had like the two black guys in high school, you know, where it's like in the military, it's from all the states and it's all different colors and all different religions and all, it's just completely diverse. So when you're stuck in a foxhole running, you know, the games, military games with people, and you have to pretend that you're like actually, you know, at war, and you're like, okay, well, I have this guy and this guy, and the brotherhood it creates, you don't see color anymore and you don't see religion and stuff anymore. It's very, it's just different. So I feel like we totally like did not cover what her question was at all.
I think we answered her question.
Did we? Because I'm like, how did we get on this topic?
I think we did. If this is the Millie I'm thinking of too, she's from Ireland anyway, so I think we did. I mean,
language barrier.
I think so. I also think part of Millie's question, some of it goes back to, I talked about a book on here before. It's The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Can't Agree on Politics and Religion. And it talks about how liberals and conservatives, and I'm not talking about, this book was written prior to Trump. So Trump's a totally different like entity that we can pull out of this. It talks about how conservatives, they have five key elements that they kind of hone in on, and you know, it's tradition, military, police. Like there's five things that actually light up their brains when they're hooked up to machines and they see things like these, but the Democrats have them too. and they sound better on paper, but it's like social justice. They want equality. They want diversity. Like those are the things that light up their brain. And in a perfect world, you would need both to make sure that everyone's needs are being met. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Trump is something different. So he has really consolidated the GOP into something that I don't recognize anymore. But I think the Democrats, for the most part, and the Democrats are not perfect. Okay.
No.
We still have an issue with saying you can't be a Democrat if you're not pro-choice, which to me is still a purity test. Like, and we shouldn't have purity tests. You can have a variety of thoughts and feelings and still identify more as a certain party. But I think that the Democrats, they, like Jean said, they try to appeal to more also because they care about more people. So whereas the GOP is a little bit more wired to focus on, I can't worry about everyone else because I have to make sure my family is okay. And I see these other issues as existential threats to my family. And whether or not that's actually true, they feel that it is. So that's kind of where the difference. So there's security and safety in voting for the GOP, where the Democrats want to see everybody included, which is, I think, why they try to appeal to more people. So...
also, not to take it back to Star Wars, but
man, this is gonna be impressive.
I mean, when you were talking about like how both need to exist, you know, one of the things that I got into a discussion with someone about at Star Wars was how both the light and the dark always have to exist. So there always has to be like a Jedi, but there always has to be a Sith.
There has to be balance.
So like, there has to be balance, and balance is what makes the force possible. So I think that that's one thing that like we've really lost track of with our politics and our political system is not the force, but just the balance. Like it's not that we need to be fighting against each other. We both need to exist for the reasons that we need to exist for, but we need to find out a way to like peacefully do it. And that's obviously what the entire fucking saga of the Star Wars is about.
Well, the reason there needs to be places for everyone at the table, the GOP included, and women and people of color, and like the reason there has to be places for everyone is because everyone sees things differently. So you could have the best intentions with setting a program up, but because you're not opposed to it, you don't see the problems that could arise. So you need the other side to say, whoa, pump the brakes a little bit. What about A, B, and C? How are you going to address that when it comes up? So you have to have both, as infuriating as that is sometimes.
Right.
Not Trump, though. Trump's a different entity.
Don't need Trump.
No, he is all for himself. And I guarantee you put him under that test and nothing lights up in his brain.
Yeah, he's Emperor Palpatine and we need to get the fuck rid of him. All right.
Is that another Star Wars reference?
She'll be here all night, folks. All night.
I feel like I'm going to do a couple more, so buckle
up. But you know
up.
What? I love it because you're so seamless with these. They fit in so perfectly.
Everyone has a talent. This is Aaron's.
Yeah. Here, folks. This is probably the least listened to podcast, too. Great.
All right. This is from Kate, and she says, this question is for Stacey. I tried your ideas with my kids over summer, and we had a great time. Any tips for the long winter break?
Oy. I think it really depends on how old your kids are. If you're, I'm going to go off of what I'm guessing, which is you're probably a stay-at-home mom with younger kids. My kids are older now, so they're not as hard to entertain. I can tell them to go away, and they'll go, you know, play video games or watch a movie. But with younger kids, I remember breaks seemed so long when they were little. Honestly, like something that really helped me was keeping a schedule, because out here with our like modified year round school, the kids get 2 to 3 weeks off. So like keeping a schedule was really important. I mean, after Christmas, we always did like, you can sleep in, stay in your pajamas all day for a day or two, play with your new toys, be lazy, eat candy for breakfast. But then it was like, it just seemed to keep everybody's sanity for them to get up and actually put clothes on, brush your teeth at a normal time, eat breakfast, and just do that for like a majority of break really keeps your sanity. And then getting out of the house once a day, even if it's just to go to the grocery store for 5 minutes, because kids get cabin fever, and I feel like they start to bicker with each other. They bicker with you. They're tired of being at home. Like, so just that little bit of plan a trip to the mall. Return whatever you need to return from Christmas. Plan a trip to the grocery store, the library, whatever your town has that's something for the kids to get out and see and do. Get a breath of fresh air. Like, that's really important. And then some of the winter stuff, I mean, we live in California, so I feel like some of the summer stuff crosses over. We can still go outside and, like, play with chalk. But if you live somewhere where it snows, I don't know, plan a sledding trip. We don't have that problem.
Good luck.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, cooking and baking, I know you probably have, like, if you're, like, our house, you have all the cookies and all the fudge and shit from Christmas left over. But having your kids help with the cooking, you know, like, okay, it's lunchtime. Make sure lunchtime's at the same time every day to keep that schedule kind of flowing and have them help out, you know, because that's always like a nice skill to have. And it's good to have help in the kitchen. So cooking's a good one. I don't know.
What about you, Jean? What do you wish parents would do with their kids over break to make it easier when they come back to you? Besides ether and duct tape, yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. No, you know what? Like, I teach, you know, I teach older kids. My kids are 16, 17, 18, 19 at the alternative. So the parents have had it. The parents go to work and say, just don't burn the house down. That's what they say. I will say my one experience, I have no children myself, but last early March, we had a snow day, and my niece couldn't take the time off from work anymore because she had already taken a couple of snow days off. So she begged me to watch my five-year-old great nephew. Now, let me tell you, not having any kids and not having much patience, I had this kid for 10 hours. And I will totally agree with Stacy that keeping him on a schedule made all the difference. You do an indoor thing in the morning, then you make them watch a little tiny bit of TV, then you take them outside in the snow, snow forts, snowmen, snowball fights, then you bring them in for lunch, then you make them watch a little something again on TV, then you take them out again in the afternoon. Whatever you have to do, the schedule is what saved me. I couldn't take them in the car to drive anywhere because it was a snow day, but Just knowing in my mind that we're going to do this, we're going to do these three things in the morning and then these three things in the afternoon, it kind of helped me with my sanity. And I don't know, maybe made the day for him. He's five. Maybe it made it a little interesting for him. But schedule, schedule, schedule.
And it makes you, I mean, I know it makes me sound like real uptight, which I think a lot of people probably think I am with schedules and chore lists and stuff. But seriously, like, you can have those days. Like, my kids normally get up at, like, 6:30 in the morning. Okay, on break, we're not getting up till 8:30. Like, it's not like we're on some crazy Nazi schedule, right?
Right.
But, like, having that, like, little bit of structure, I swear, helps so much.
Like, you're totally right, because as a teacher, I know that. As a teacher, you have to keep the kids, I have to keep them structured and scheduled every day. That's what they expect. They go nuts if you don't have them on some sort of identifiable structure. Like you said, it doesn't have to be, okay, we got the day down to 20-minute intervals. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If they have a structure and a schedule at home, it will make that kind of transition back and forth a little bit easier.
Yeah,
I think too, even if like you're like a stay at home worker, you know what I mean? Like you work at home, like you still need a schedule. You still need to get up and shower and get ready. Right. Normally, I think a lot of people do just to keep that like I have a responsibility, you know, that sort of thing. But like I think kids too, they really like the idea that like I do have a schedule because I think they're so young when they don't have one. They're just like, ah, oh, my God.
Totally.
That's how I would be. That's how I would be.
When we got this question, I Googled it also because my son's 18 months old, so he does whatever we make him do. And one of the recommendations was also to create a jar and write one activity for like the morning and one for the afternoon. And after the kids finish their getting dressed, getting their teeth brushed, like doing whatever they have to do, they get to pull something out, and it's things like going outside and building a snowman. This person was obviously from the where it snows. The second one was go pick out a new book from the library. Like, there's, you let them pick, and even if they're mundane kind of whatever tasks, they feel like they've drawn something, like they've gotten to pick something, so it makes it more exciting for them than you just saying, hey, go outside and play in the snow.
Yeah.
They've, like, drawn it as, like, their choice. So
yeah,
they go do that. So that's another.
I think, too, like, being a stay-at-home mom, it's draining on you. Like, you could stay in your pajamas all day. You could drop your kids off at school and pick them up in your pajamas. You could literally be, like, a sloth all day if you wanted to. So I think the little bit of, like, having a schedule and making yourself get out of the house every day, even if it's just the grocery store, 10 minutes around, you know, whatever, doing, go walk around the park, that also keeps the mom sane, too. It keeps the kids, like, you know, from getting cabin fever, but it also keeps the mom, like, okay, I at least had to put on clothes and go be a member of society for 5 minutes. Like, it's huge. That's real big.
And why do the kids have 3 weeks off at Christmas? It seems excessive.
It is. We have a weird schedule. It's a weird schedule.
Okay.
Oh, so they don't go back next week, Stacey?
They don't go back till the 13th of January.
Jesus. They're
like college kids around here, man.
Yep. Man.
That's like in Connecticut, though, like we only had this year, we had a week and a half off, which is longer than normal just because of the way the holidays fell, both on Wednesdays. But normally it's just a week, but we get anywhere from 8 to 10 weeks off in the summer.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We only get like 6 weeks.
So it's just, it's just the way that they feel like a year round schedule is better than a summer schedule.
So Michelle says, my new girlfriend got me 2 tops for Christmas and I hate them. Is it okay to exchange them or should I just suck it up and wear them?
That depends on your girlfriend, 100%. Mm-hmm. Around
for
here,
sure.
It's like, if you spend the money, like, I would rather give you a gift, and if you don't like it, if I spend $50 on you and you don't like it, I would much rather you exchange it for something you like for $50. That's a lot of money. So
100%.
My
agree.
Feelings right. don't get hurt if you want to exchange something, but if your girlfriend is somebody that gets her feelings hurt real easily.
Get a new girlfriend.
You might want to hang those shirts in the back of the closet just to save a fight if she's like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. If she is not okay with her, not okay with you exchanging.
So I think the key word in here is new girlfriend. Also, you're at that stage where you're like, don't, everything's happy and wonderful and you don't want to upset them.
Yep.
Well, but you know what? We don't know how new. I mean, if they just started dating 2 months ago, I might suck it up.
Right, exactly. I might and you might even have to suck it up and wear one of those shirts in front of her if you're that new.
Except if it's an itchy sweater, man. Don't do it for anybody under any circumstances.
I have first of all, why, if they're that new, why is she buying her clothes? Like, come on. Does that mean she doesn't like what she's wearing?
Wow,
like,
Erin. Yeah, that got real deep. Calm down, Erin.
I'm just saying, she bought her clothes and she bought it with the knowledge that she may or may not like it. So if she's cool with it, exchange it. Get something you like. Like, come on. Although I will say, one of the things I hate is like when I buy gifts for someone and they don't like it. Because a lot of times your gift comes from the heart, which is like, I think this person's really going to love this thing. So I get it. But that being said, I would exchange it.
How about this? Just buy, if you got a new girlfriend, just buy her sexy underwear.
Yeah, don't buy clothes for your new girlfriend. That's the take home here.
The moral of the story is get her something with Baby Yoda on it. Star Wars.
Get her a bottle of wine.
We have
Nobody
not been helpful at all
of wine.
To poor Michelle, who's like,
well,
wear it or no.
Okay. Really, I feel like if you're only a few weeks in, you're going to have to hang those shirts in the back of the closet, maybe even take one out and wear it. And if you guys end up in a relationship that is long term, a year from now, you can say, you know what? That sucked and I had to wear it even though I hated it. And you guys will have a laugh about it later if you last that long. So
I actually agree with Stacey on this one. I'm going to say yes.
Just
wear it. Suck it up and wear it. Unless it like completely clashes with your personality.
Yes.
But yeah, no, even then, fuck it. You still have to wear. Ralphie had to wear that rabbit suit on Christmas Day to make his fucking aunt happy. So wear the ugly shirt, even if it clashes with your personality. However, I'm going to go all J.K. Rowling here and say, if it's an itchy fucking sweater, then no, don't wear it.
All right.
All right.
J.K. Rowling somewhere else, and I was like, no, no, no.
We're having a pleasant conversation.
No, I just meant I'm going to be controversial and unpopular at this moment.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant.
So when you pull a J.K. Rowling, it just means you're going to be controversial?
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I'll remember that.
All right.
I like it.
Sarah says, we are having a New Year's party at our house, and some of my friends have kids. Is it okay to say they can't bring them?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, is 100% okay. Oh my god.
Yes.
Honestly, I would rather know if my friends don't want kids there or not, because it's every time you get invited, it's like, is it okay to bring kids? You don't want to be that person that's like, can I bring my kid? Because then they're like, well, they'll be the only kid here. Just right. Say no kids.
On
say
that no kids. Same note, somebody that's had kids for 16 years. Yeah. Okay, we go on a Christmas or a birthday camping trip every year, and I tell everybody, this is not a kid-friendly trip. And I don't have any, like, bad feelings about that, because I'm like, everybody wants to drink and hang out by the campfire and cuss and do whatever they want to do. This is not a kid-friendly trip.
Yes.
Okay, it's once a year. But on that same aspect, if you're going to have parties like a New Year's Eve party or like a party where there's a bonfire and everybody's cussing and drinking, say no kids on the invitation so you don't get people questioning this. Because I had to text my brother the other day, hey, we got invited to your New Year's Eve party. Like, is this kid friendly? And he's like, oh, yeah, you're fine. And I'm like, okay. Like, just if you're going to invite people, say kid friendly or not kid friendly. Like, because everybody's wondering.
It's easier for parents to know up front. And if they can get a sitter, they will. And if they can't, they won't come.
I'm never offended. Ever offended. Right. If somebody's like, hey, this is like an event I'm inviting you guys to, it's not kid friendly, I'm never offended.
Right.
Right.
I just want to know.
Right. Because you know what? Adults, as much as they love their kids, they deserve a night out once in a while.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But don't play games. Let them know right up front.
Exactly.
Have you guys ever seen Sisters?
Yeah.
when Samantha Bee and her husband arrive and they have their son with them, and she's like, no, no. She's like, no, he's not welcome. He's not welcome.
Well, and as a parent, you'd rather just know up front.
Right.
Because you feel like an asshole calling and being like, hey, can I bring my kid? Because you feel like you're putting your friend in an awkward situation to either choose if your kid can be there or not. Just say it up front. It's way better.
Right. Yep. And if you know in advance, you could make arrangements in advance to get a sitter if you want to go. You know, but you can't do that if you have to wait till the last minute and find out.
I will tell you what my parents used to do. Now, keep in mind, this was the 80s. But my parents, when we were real little, like, they had friends with all ranges. My dad's a cop, so we only hung out with cop families. But they would make the older kids, when we went to these parties, watch the younger kids. So everyone would bring their kids, and we had nothing to do with the party. Like, we were shoved in a room somewhere. So if you have, what I meant by that was, if you have friends with, if you have a lot of kids, or friends with kids, maybe setting up something, especially on New Year's, where the older ones can watch the younger ones away from everything is a good solution too for everyone.
That is a super good idea.
Yeah.
That is making it work.
Well, and the older kids made money while they were there, because all the parents gave them like $10 to watch them.
They're
so,
probably like, all drunk, like, here, take whatever's in my wallet.
Well, so the 16-year-olds, they ended up making like $150 because there was like 10 kids there. Yeah, so,
for sure.
So was your father a moderate liberal or a Republican?
My father is still a Republican, although he's also a Republican who is pro-gun control and who doesn't believe in global warming, but gets real mad when people don't recycle and don't use renewable energy. And he doesn't think that humans have caused the destruction, but he thinks that we should be leaving the planet cleaner than how we found it. So,
and he's also all right, come
so
around
he's a moderate.
Well, he won't tell you that, but yes, he technically, but if he had to write his feelings out on paper without putting a label, he would be a moderate.
He's a moderate, and that's why he came up with that amazing idea that worked for everybody.
I really doubt he did. I'm sure it was the moms. I'm sure. Okay,
well, then I take back giving a man credit for something a woman probably came up with, which is the history of the world.
It happens all the time. You're good.
Now I want to talk about that Hillary Clinton interview, and we can't because Stacey Dempsey's not here.
We have one more question.
Dempsey! I watched 4 of the 5 episodes, Dempsey. I'm she saving the last one.
Oh, the last thing I wanted to say about Sarah's question was, if they're really your friends, they appreciate your honesty. So that's all 100%. I had to say about it. So Tammy says, thoughts on Pete Buttigieg versus Amy Klobuchar. I'm not comfortable with Sanders or Warren, so I'm looking for insight. So I'm assuming that Tammy is looking to vote for a more moderate person in the primaries, and Biden is not on the list, which is what I got from Sanders and Warren you're not comfortable with. So Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar tend to fall more on the moderate side. I like Pete as like an individual. I think he's well spoken. I think he's very intelligent. I think he has a lot of great ideas. What I'm uncomfortable with is the fact that he's a mayor, and we've already had someone as of right now in office who's terribly underqualified to be at that upper level of government. But I don't have any negative feelings about Pete Buttigieg, so I'm afraid I don't have a ton of insight regarding that. Amy Klobuchar, so what they're both trying to prove right now is, we all know that the reason that Hillary lost was because she didn't get Pennsylvania, she didn't get Wisconsin, she didn't get Minnesota, she didn't get what used to be considered the blue wall. Pete and Klobuchar are both from the Midwest. So they're trying to say, look, we keep winning. We've won in the Midwest. We can win the Midwest again, which would put a Democrat in office. I think that's their argument for electability. Pete, though, when he ran for statewide office, did not win. And Amy Klobuchar has. I like Amy Klobuchar. I really do. I know she had issues with her staff. There's been a lot of complaints about how she's treated her staff. I wish she would have made a public statement apologizing for that behavior and assuring everyone that that wouldn't happen again. However, I don't know how close that falls on like unconscious sexism on my part.
Right.
So I like them both. I don't have anything bad to say about either one of them. If I had to choose, like gun in my head, vote for Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar, I would probably vote for Amy Klobuchar.
So
only because she has a proven track record of winning on a statewide level versus Pete Buttigieg has won mayor of South Bend and hasn't won at a statewide level. And in fact, lost.
Can I say I absolutely agree with you, because one of so I'm from Indiana. Like, I did a lot of my...
You are? We couldn't tell by your accent.
You know what? It's Chicago, motherfucker. It's Chicago, all right?
My fucking kid.
So, that being said, I'm going to go eat some tacos. No. So...
Of course you are.
No, but like, I... yeah. I absolutely had no idea who Pete Buttigieg was. And I'm like,
no one
from
did.
Indiana.
It's fine. No one did.
It's like, I literally, so like, I worked in higher education.
Name the mayor of Orlando.
This is going to mean something when I actually say it. So I worked in higher education. So shut up. So I worked in higher ed, and I was an admissions personnel for Ivy Tech Community College. One of the main campuses is in South Bend, Indiana. I was in South Bend, Indiana 30, 40 times a year. Why did I not know who he was? Like, I should have known who he was. Now, I'm not saying that that's my fault. That's not my fault. That's his fault. I feel like I should have known. I should have known who the fuck he was, and I didn't. And, like, I feel like maybe that's Indiana's fault as a whole, just because there was not a lot of press going on about him, even though I do know that he turned around South Bend in, like, a really positive way. Now, I know that now. I didn't know that then. But, like, I would probably vote Amy all the way, which is interesting and strange.
to me. What about you, Jean?
I know that Stacey Dempsey has warned us not to say anything about the Hillary Clinton Howard Stern interview, but I'm going to defy that directive.
Do it.
And I'm going to say that I agree with Hillary in that I will support 100% whoever can fucking beat Donald Jackass Trump. Whether it be Biden, whether it be Klobuchar. I think that Mayor Pete is going to be like a 2028 guaranteed win.
Yeah.
I think he's a little green right now, and he has to kind of be out there. Erin made a great point. She's from Indiana. She didn't know who the fuck he was. And I don't think that was anybody's fault. I think that's, like Jackie said, name a mayor of any other town right. that you're not from. But I see so many things about him that I do like, but I don't feel that his time is right now. I just don't. And I want to ask that listener, what's wrong with Elizabeth Warren?
Right?
What is wrong with her? She is nerd chic.
But I don't
fucking nerd.
I think she's more moderate than we give her credit. And I don't know. I don't have the
Republican.
I mean, like, I just feel like there's a lot about her that is so middle of the road that should appeal to more Republicans than it does. And I don't know how to, like, articulate that, especially now I'm like 3/4 of a bottle of wine in. But I truly think, like, I just feel so bad about it because I listened to her speak. So obviously I'm not going to talk about the Hillary thing either, but one of the things that that got me during the Hillary interview that we all watched, or we should watch, or we haven't, but we will, is that I look at me looking at Stacey. But like, I truly like listening to her speak. It's like, uplifting. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, wow, this is someone that I can respect, not even just like on a personal level, but like on a level of, you are a professional woman that I feel could have led this country in a really great way. Would she have made mistakes? Sure. What? I mean, who the fuck doesn't? No one's perfect. But that being said, like, I think to myself, like, okay, Elizabeth Warren is so well-spoken. I see her speak and I see her connect with her audience, and it just makes me feel so good about public speaking in general, but about the future of politics because of what's happened with Donald Trump. And that kind of, maybe Donald Trump happened for a reason. Maybe he happened because we need a generation that's going to push us forward in the way that we need to go, instead of this whole like back and forth, you know, whatever the fuck's happening right now. But I would like to know from this listener, message us, tell us what don't you like about it? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, I want to know.
I'm just curious.
Well, here's what I think too. I think a lot of people are scared because they just want Trump out of office. So right. I think they're looking at electability a different way than we normally would. So like if Obama had run at a mid-year, if he had run when George Bush was up for re-election, he probably would not have won. I agree. So what people are looking for is the safest route possible. And informed Democrats, because a lot of Democrats, they're not even paying attention to who's running right now. They may tune into a debate or two, but they're not even going to start paying attention until the Iowa caucuses happen, which is in February. And then they'll start tuning in because primaries happen a few months after that. So a lot of them are paying attention. So what they're worried about now, what do they know? They know that Trump won by 80,000 votes, essentially, in 4 key states. So 80,000 votes because the Electoral College decided this election. So I think one of the pushes is they don't want a super liberal from one of the coasts. even though I agree with you, I don't think Elizabeth Warren is a super liberal. I actually think she's much more conservative than people give her credit for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they look at Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, and I don't actually have anything against either one of them. I think Amy Klobuchar is very well spoken. I think she did a great job against Brett Kavanaugh. I actually like a lot about her, and I like about Pete Buttigieg too. But I think they're looking at how do we get those states. And if there's a person in one of those states who, it's the same reason why Joe Biden continuously trends above, is because there was a recent poll that came out. And the reason that a big reason that people are supporting Joe Biden is because they've heard from their Republican friends that they would vote for Joe Biden. So I think people are way too focused on electability right now. And if there's a way to win the Midwest, that hands the Democrats the presidency. And I don't think they actually care. Not that they don't care who's sitting in the seat, but like we have said, we will vote for whoever is elected the primary candidate, right? It's the same process.
Yeah.
So I think they see it as, if she can win the Midwest, even as a white woman, if she can win the Midwest, she can win the rest of the country too, because the super liberal coasts will fall in line. Because they will vote for who's ever in that seat. So everyone's worried about the flyover states. So that's why I think it's coming down to who has a proven track record in the flyover states. No offense to the flyover states. That's just what it's called. So I think that's where I think people are overthinking their choices. So I wouldn't necessarily think that it means they don't like Warren or Sanders. I think sometimes it thinks, and I don't know about Tammy's case specifically, I don't think they think they can win in anywhere but Washington, Oregon, California, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut. Like the coasts they'll get. What about everyone in the middle? Who will they vote for?
I just find it so odd though. Like Amy, I feel like flew out of nowhere.
She's been around for a minute.
I know she's been around, but like all of a sudden you heard nothing about her. And I feel like the first real stuff you heard about her was how awful she was to her staff.
That's how elections work, though. That's how presidential elections work.
And that's a woman thing, too.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Like, during the Hillary Clinton interview that we're not supposed to mention, like, she even said, like, the most negative things are what comes out first, and it's so sad. Because, like, I will, by the next podcast, I will learn more about Amy Klobuchar. Not because I want to vote for her, but because I feel like
you should want to know all your options.
Exactly. Like, I feel like I want to be the most informed voter I can be when I go into, when I step into the, and that's, I don't think that that's necessarily like, this is where I agree with you about the college educated view, Jackie. Like, it's not because I'm college educated. It's because I'm fucking scared shitless. That's where it is. It's like, I'm so fucking scared about my future as a lesbian that I am, it has nothing to do with my college background. It has everything to do with, like, I want to make sure that Donald fucking Trump isn't going to fuck up my future any more than he already has.
But I think that's what's driving a lot of Democrats right now. It has nothing to do with who the actual candidates are. They're worried about who can beat him. That's it. That's all everyone's... When you get down to it, we can talk about change. And big progress, and like we can have a conversation about universal healthcare. We could talk about all those things, but really, what it comes down to, if you look deep in yourself, is who will beat Trump.
Yeah,
and I think that's a good argument for Klobuchar and Buttigieg.
I admit it,
and I don't necessarily think it's a good thing, because obviously we want him out of office so bad. But I think it's also like a bad thing, you know, like it's like a double edged sword. It's like, here we have these really great candidates like Warren who has these ideals and these things that like I could get behind. Like, I really enjoy listening to her, and she has great, great ideas about the economy, and she's so fucking smart. And I'm just like,
is that most important? Honestly, if you look deep in yourself, do you care more about those things or getting Trump out of office?
Getting Trump out of office.
That's what people are struggling with.
I agree 100%. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's such a double-edged sword. It's like, you want these people to come out and get Trump out of office, but you want these people to come out at a time when they are really electable.
Right.
And like, I feel so bad that I feel like Elizabeth Warren is so wonderful and such a great candidate and so good. But like you said, like, flyover states, is she really going to be electable in those states? And I hope so. But it scares me that she's not.
And I think that's what the person was saying.
I have such a nerd crush on Elizabeth Warren. Now that Harris is out, my
look how close she gets to the
party. I know. Like, like my old synth, like my old hormones that are barely hanging in there. You know, what little desire I have left in my menopausal loins, I've now directed toward nerd crush on Elizabeth Warren. I'll vote for her just for being the cutest little nerd ever to walk on a debate stage.
And let's be real. Who doesn't want to watch Kate McKinnon be Elizabeth Warren for the next fucking 4-8 years? Let's go. Let's go, Kate McKinnon.
That alone is fucking worth it.
But I get.
She nails it.
I get our listeners' plight, right? Like, I get it. It's scary. A lot of people are feeling like you want to pick the right person, like that. You're worried that if we pick the wrong person, and that I'm actually worried that Biden is not the right person. And I think he has so much name recognition right now, and he has more of the African American of the black vote than Buttigieg, than Klobuchar, than Warren, than Sanders. What I worry about is Biden getting on a debate stage with Trump and Trump just annihilating him because he's not as sharp or as articulate or as focused as some of the other candidates.
Oh, I was like, as Trump?
No.
I could send a monkey fucking up there and it would be more articulate.
No, that's
Trump.
Actually not true. Trump is a genius when it comes to low blows and one-liners and Twitter-driven material. Trump is a showman. Like, Trump knows how to cut in places that Fox News and Breitbart and the New York Post can hone in on one-liners and fire up the base. He's not a smart man, but he is smart at what he does. I'm not saying he could solve an equation if you gave it to him, but does he know how to play an audience? Yes, and that's what got him elected.
True,
he knows how to play an audience. And Klobuchar, actual likability, I think Pete Buttigieg is more likable than Amy Klobuchar, like on screen, the way he speaks, his kind of tone,
and he's
his cadence.
I
think he's more aesthetically like listening. He's just more aesthetically pleasing. Amy Klobuchar has a little bit of bite in her voice and all these things. Again, that's very sexist. Unfortunately, that's how a lot of the electoral people vote is do they like you?
Right.
If they elected the most qualified person every time, we wouldn't have 80% of the presidents that we've had.
You're right.
We've always voted. Like, look at JFK. He was just the more likable one.
Right.
So
I'm telling you, Buttigieg will be president one day.
Oh, I have
you
no
mark
doubt.
My word.
I agree
I
with
just
you.
Don't
mark
think
my
it's
someday.
Time. Yeah.
Just not in 2020.
It makes me sad because, based on the Hillary Clinton interview,
she should have fucking been president. God.
Well, I get it. You want to like Pete. He's gay. He's out. Like, you want to like him.
Yeah.
You want to throw your money behind him. But
I love him.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good predicament. Tammy, I will tell you this. It's a good predicament to be in, to have so many great choices that we have to have these conversations. There's several people to choose from that are plausible options. And your plight doesn't go unnoticed. But I think if we focus too much on who's the rest of the country going to be willing to elect versus who you actually want. Remember, these are just the primaries. Vote for who you really want. And the rest will pan out.
Right.
I have a question, Jackie. If you could answer for me, and I don't know if you know. But so here is Amy Klobuchar, who, you know, I know a little bit about, but not a whole lot. So she doesn't drop out. But why did Kamala?
She ran out of money.
Oh, my God.
Was that really
that same thing, Aaron?
Oh, my God. We were. Oh, is that really it?
Her campaign was poorly managed. I really like Kamala Harris, so this isn't a knock on her at all. But her campaign was poorly managed. She made the mistake of hiring her sister to be the campaign manager. And even though her sister's had experience in being a campaign manager, there was some struggle at the top for who is in charge of what and what policies are. And Kamala isn't. She's not an idealist. She had the foresight to say, I don't have any hard stick opinions. I'm willing to listen to other people's and build my, you know, decision from there. That doesn't play well in early parts of the race, because the only people paying attention in early parts of the race are political junkies. So they want to hear what you actually stand for. And when you have this many choices and this many people to send money to, they're not sending them to you because you haven't taken a stand for any one thing. And yeah. Hardcore Democrats, super liberals, they don't want to hear that. Does that make her a bad option? Of course not. I actually think that makes her one of the best because she wants input from all sides. But in a mm-hmm. field this True. Big, it played against her.
Yeah.
But I wonder, hey, Kamala Harris, I guarantee you, is at the top of everyone's list to be VP. And I don't mind sure. keeping her in California for a little God. Bit longer as one of our senators. So you could all kick rocks. We'll keep her.
She's so you can
look at her a little longer. What the fuck?
She's my number one pick for VP.
Easy, Gene.
I can't tell.
Gene's next book will be a political romance based.
I honestly, Gene, I think that's a really good idea, and I think you should do it.
So what's everyone obsessed
Somebody's
with this
week? Somebody's going to steal it on me before I get to it.
I will never. I don't know enough about politics. I'd have to write it with you guys.
What's everyone obsessed with this week?
You write five books a year. I can't keep up.
Ayo.
Obsessed with?
Yeah. Do not say Star Wars again.
I'm not going to. God damn.
We're going to give you and Stacey your own podcast for 30 minutes.
We should.
Yeah.
Because I think she's got a lot. Yeah. She's got a lot to say about Baby Yoda, too. So I apologize that what I'm obsessed with is going to be a little story time, but I promise you it has like an ending that needs to be heard.
Oh.
So
go for it.
You already know.
Do
you've
it,
heard
it. My
you
sister,
live with me.
Do it.
So my 16-year-old 100-pound daughter had the flu 2 weeks ago. She comes home Friday, headache, not feeling good, run down, sore, whatever. And I'm like, all right, go to bed early. Wake up the next day, throwing up, 102 fever all day, won't eat anything, trying to get Motrin in her to get her fever down, won't eat. She eats like 2 tortilla chips the entire day. So Sunday, she's starting to feel better. She eats a little bit more and I get Motrin in her. And by Monday morning, I'm like, go to school. You're fine. Like her fever's been down. She's okay. So she gets to school and she's like, I'm so sore. And I'm like, yeah, laying in bed the whole weekend will do that too. You're fine. And she's like, no, I'm like really sore. Like my legs are really sore and shaky. And I'm like, you're fine. Like you had the flu. Sucks for you. Suck it up. You're 16. So.
Stacey's not my mom.
You know?
Gangsta like, mom.
Yeah. So the next morning. She did same thing. She wakes up. My legs are so sore. Like, what is wrong with me? And I'm like, you had the flu. Like, you need to take it easy, eat more, whatever. So she's at school. It's finals right before Christmas break. And she texts me and she's like, this isn't right. Like, I'm so shaky and sore. I can't make it up the hill to get to my classes. And I'm like, I can come get you. But if I come get you and you're missing finals, I'm taking you to the ER. You know, like it's a teenager. I'm telling you, this better be serious. And she's like, yes, please. And I'm like, oh, shit. All right. So I take her to the ER. The guy comes in. It's an old man. And he looks her over and is like, so you had the flu? And she's like, yeah. He's like, all right, well, we'll do some blood tests. And she's like, no, let me tell you about my legs. They're sore and weak. And he's like, yeah, for sure. Like, we're going to do some blood tests. And she's like, okay, I just got dismissed. But whatever. So he draws blood, does the blood test, and comes back and is like, everything's good. You're fine. Your white count is a little bit low, which means you don't have an infection, but everything's good. And I'm going to start the paperwork to dismiss you. And she's like, what the hell? So the lady comes in. I pay because it's the emergency room and it's like $5,000. And they come in and I'm like, so that's it? And she goes, yeah, we're starting the paperwork to let you go. And I said, okay, is the doctor coming back in? And she's like, yeah, he'll be in a minute. It's really busy. So he comes in and he's like, all right, so if you need to follow up in a couple of days, you know, you can follow up with your pediatrician. And my 16-year-old goes, no, I don't feel good. I'm telling you, my legs hurt and this is not normal. I know. So she's wow. like, yeah. So she's like, I don't believe that what you're saying is true. It's not. So backtrack. He tells her it's because you didn't eat breakfast this morning. You need to eat. And the nurse acted like, silly teenager, you need to eat more. And she was like, she looked at me like, excuse me, like I know my body and like that's not what it is. But they treated her very like silly little teenager. Breakfast Girl. Is very important, you know. And she was like, that's not. And so she told the doctor, this is not okay. I know that we've already been like, what's it called where you like are dismissed?
Really missed.
released.
Discharged.
She goes, discharge. I know that, like, we've already been discharged. This is not okay. I'm not done. And so he goes, well, I can run. He goes, okay, take off your shoes. So she takes her shoes off. He hasn't even looked at her. He hasn't touched her this entire time. So he says, take off your shoes. And, like, he looks at her legs. He says, show me where it's sore. And he feels on her muscles. And he's like, okay, there's one more test I can do. And it tells me if your muscles are deteriorating. And you could tell he's kind of like, whatever. And so she's like, okay, good, because that's what it feels like. You know, like, that's how I feel. That's what I've been trying to tell you this entire time. We've been in the ER for 5 hours. So he comes back, and no shit, this test comes back that her muscles are deteriorated. It's the, like, test they do for an enzyme that is secreted into your blood after you've had a heart attack. It's your creatine.
Holy shit.
Right. And he goes, wow, so it's pretty high. So I'm going to have you meet with a doctor tomorrow morning. And, you know, like, you were right. And she's like, this is what I've been telling you.
So we meet,
right. We meet with a doctor the next morning, and he does more blood tests. Everything is okay. She's totally fine. What it is her body, because she's only 100 pounds soaking wet and she has no BMI, her body was using – she went into starvation mode, and her body was using her muscle as fuel because she has no fat to burn. God. Right. So
– same.
I wish I had that problem.
No BMI.
Right.
No BMI.
So point of the story. Number one, if you have kids that are, I've always heard that, like, feed a fever, starve a flu thing. And I've always been like, yeah. Nobody wants to eat when you have a fever. So what is that about? Why do they say that? Okay. Well, if you have a kid that is, like, on the edge of, like, being kind of underweight, when they have the flu and, you know, when they have a fever, feed them. Make them eat no matter what, because it's really important, because they're on that balance of going into starvation mode. And number two, now, if my 16-year-old can tell the doctor, no, you're fucking wrong, you need to do more tests, so can you. Because that's something I know that I struggle with when I go to the doctor and he's like, oh, you're okay, lose some weight, you know? Like, you're, whatever the case may be, drink more water. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I feel like that's something everybody struggles with.
So proud of little Lex.
Yeah.
Right? Your daughter is a rock star. You know what? 30 years from now, she's going to be fucking president.
Right? Let's talk about how I said earlier that the flu is the best way to lose weight. And, like,
I know, that's why she was like, well. Lined up.
Jeez, man, give me a fucking spoiler alert.
What?
Come on.
No, but you know what? Seriously, Lex, yeah. That she, I'm sorry, Stace, Lex is the total product of your awesome mothering, yeah. And having sweet baby angel feminist Kai as a father.
But I feel like I'm personally somebody that struggles with, if I'm at the doctor's office and the doctor is like, you're okay, you're fine, it's not that serious. Because in my mind, or I've Googled something, I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying. And I go to the ER and they're like, you're fine, chill out. I'm like, okay. And I accept, like, that the doctor is telling me I'm okay, when in my head I'm kind of like, maybe it's more serious, you know? And I talked to one of my friends and she was like, that's something that a lot of people struggle with. Is standing right. Up to a doctor and saying, no, I want more tests done. And so I feel like that's something that a lot of people should be more open about, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yeah, I think it's really awesome that she did that, because at that age even, you know what I mean? Like,
to have the cojones to do that, that's awesome.
Right. Like, my mom was a nurse, so, like, when I went with her to the, like, I would go to the doctor, she would come with, like, she was, like, my spokesperson, you know? I'm like, tell them how I feel, mom. You know what I mean? Like, instead of, like, owning my health and my person at that age. Like, I think that's awesome. Like, obviously, Lex always, like, amazes me in her maturity level, because I just think she's amazing. But, like, that's another notch in her belt. Like, I think she's pretty fucking phenomenal. And that's thanks to you and Kai, Stacey.
Lex is going to change the world one day, and I'm so here for it. Because mm-hmm. if anyone's gonna
me
change,
too,
it,
man.
People like her.
Yeah.
You know what? It's gonna be girls like Lex who will grow into women that are gonna fucking crush the patriarchy.
Yeah. Fuck word. Yeah.
Word. Sorry, yo. I totally took over like a big old story time, but I was like,
they've never done
no,
that.
My
this
God.
Is important.
Let's listen to Aaron talk for how many minutes about Baby Yoda?
Right?
We could listen.
on, no?
Go ahead, Aaron. Gee.
Oh, I'm next? Okay. Yeah. So I'm obsessed with The Morning Show. I've been obsessed with it a couple times before. I actually got two. But I'm so obsessed with it. I know Stacy and Jackie started watching it, and they're not, like, super into it. Is that right?
I think we could get into it. I think we've only watched two episodes.
Mm-hmm. We're going to watch another one tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. So I will not talk a lot about it because I think we should all talk about it once you finish it. But, like, I feel really happy about Jennifer Aniston's performance in it. Like, she made me feel really good about an ice queen and the storyline that a person that has been conditioned to feel a certain way, how that can go for someone. I feel really good about it. And I feel like I did that all without any spoilers. I'm not that drunk. Yay. Also,
plug for your current book out, your collection called Ice Queens with Aurora Ray and L. Spencer.
Hot ice.
I'm drunk.
So under Jackie's tutelage, I have decided to start watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
You're welcome.
Jesus, where have I been?
I don't know, because that's an old one.
Oh my God, I love it. I love everything about it. It's so good. I'm obsessed. It's so, so, so good. Like,
you should take all my recommendations seriously.
I mean, I do. Like, I really do. Like, it just took me a minute because I had to finish my book. All right, let's go. I got to finish my book. Now I got to finish this before I start working on the next project.
Oh, our project. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what's Aaron doing right now?
I don't know.
Which is not American Sign Language. All right. Yeah. But I've just been like, it's so crazy because for the longest time I was not like into television any longer. I was like, there are no good TV shows out there. Bah. But now I just like The Mandalorian and Schitt's Creek and, you know, this, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and The Morning Show. I just feel like there's so much great television going on right now. And it's not, you know, old school, you know, fucking Dallas. You know what I mean? Like, it's like really great.
I can't watch that.
You know, like, what was Dallas, the old one? Falcon Crest?
Did you guys remember? Fuck you. The Dallas reboot.
You knew it was going to happen.
The fucking Dallas reboot before Larry Hagman dropped dead was unfucking believable. All right, go ahead.
I knew Gene was going to ring in. I was just waiting for it. I was also like, Dallas!
I was euphoric when I fucking saw Dallas was coming back. And then fucking Larry Hagman had the bad taste to go and die after the first fucking season.
That motherfucker.
Selfish.
So, but at any rate, like, I've just been, like, really, like, excited about the idea that television is making this comeback from not being ABC, NBC, CBS. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Netflix and Apple Plus and Disney Plus. And so I know that Netflix really started this, but it's just really exciting to see. And I really enjoy the story.
Think Shonda Rhimes, same television. Like, even though, you know, Grey's Anatomy, whatever, How to Get Away with Murder, Private Practice, Scandal, like, those aren't Netflix and stuff, but I think she rose the bar so high that everyone else had to fall in line. Like, Shonda Rhimes saved television.
I fucking agree 100%. Like, I will never forget the first seasons of Grey's Anatomy, and I will never forget How to Get Away with Murder, the first couple seasons. Like, those were, like, groundbreaking television series. And, like, now it's, like, good to see that this is, like, this whole idea that television doesn't have to be boring. It can be really, really great as coming back into this whole. And I really kind of admire Apple Plus and Disney Plus, like, doing this whole one episode at a time thing again. Like, Netflix drops a whole season at a time. I think Amazon Prime does the same thing. Like,
fucking horrible. I need to binge watch stuff. I cannot do the one episode a week.
I agree, but, like, at the same time, I'm like, it makes me so excited for the next week. You know what I mean? Like, I'm, like, so in it. Like, and I think that may be part of my allure with The Morning Show is that I had to wait. Like, I literally was like a cliffhanger and I had to wait. Like, I think that is kind of reminiscent of old school television, and I don't know why I'm like so obsessed with it right now, but I really am. Like, I've watched all these new shows and I'm really digging it.
The interesting thing about the way the morning show is shot is it's really exciting the first few minutes and the last few. So it's not shot like traditional TV where they're leaving like cliffhangers at every commercial break. They are starting out exciting, they're building the plot and then leaving you hanging. Starting out exciting, building the plot and leaving you hanging. Like, it's a very movie-esque way to have a television show,
right?
Which is an interesting dynamic to watch it in. Because even we've only watched two episodes, but halfway through I'm like, oh God, I just don't know if it's that interesting. And then by the end I'm like, okay, I want to watch the next one.
Exactly. So that's exactly what I said.
It ebbs and flows.
It makes you want to watch the next episode.
It's very movie-esque and not so much television, which is, I think, an interesting approach to it.
I agree 100% because I truly feel like every episode could almost stand on its own. You know what I mean? Like, there's always like this like climactic beginning and this climactic end. And like, is there going to be a sequel? Maybe. I don't know. You guys are like, what are you doing over there?
She put her Crocs on me.
Nothing. Or what?
Nothing.
Is it like sock Crocs? I don't know what's happening, but I'm going to keep recording because one of the things that I love about the morning show is that I truly think that it has been so refreshing to see a television show led mostly by women with a couple men. I love that. And obviously, I mean, I don't have to explain why. I just love it. And I think it's also really great because Gail and I have very different tastes and television shows. Like, I love science fiction. I basically will watch anything. But Gail likes things that are going to pull her in and make her want to finish something. This has done that to her, and it's great to watch it together. Like, I'll tell you what, the final episode, I was a hot fucking mess, and I've never been like that. I will not say anything more than that. But for a TV show, it moved me to a level I did not realize was there for TV, for fucking TV, you know? I don't know.
James, anyways, what do you got this week?
Do we have time for me now?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
All right. Well,
not enough. I'm being burned tonight is ridiculous.
No, you know what? I am like, because I'm the oldest member of this podcast, I am often completely out of touch with everything that's relevant. However, I do subscribe to Netflix, and this week, and then not the discs. I actually like stream it.
There's discs still.
Yeah, I used to do the discs. I don't do that anymore. But this week, because I've been off from work, I stumbled upon Ken Burns' historic series on the Civil War, and I am fucking obsessed with Ken Burns' Civil War. When we're done podcasting tonight, I'm going to go fucking keep watching it. Yeah. I binged it for 3 hours the other night, and I am transfixed because I am a U.S. history / U.S. government sycophant. I love it, and I just stumbled upon it, and I am obsessed with it, even though it was fucking made in 1990.
Wait, so what is it?
It's called Ken Burns, It's the Civil War. And it's like an entire season that goes through the Civil War from the events leading up to it all the way through to Lincoln's assassination. And it's like there's like 9 episodes, and I'm halfway through, and I'm just obsessed with it this week.
I really want to watch it. Have you watched the it's like an old West one? I can't remember. The Frontier.
No. I did not get to that yet. But
there's another one
something.
It's like about the gold rush and like the difference, like what happened between like when we landed here and then like when Columbus and his fucking dicks landed here, killed all the Indians, and then like what happened as we progressed west. Like, right up your alley.
With Manifest fucking Destiny, where fucking President Jackson just decides that we could fucking annihilate all the Native Americans just so we can move west. Or no.
But
Okay, sorry, I'm almost done with my bottle of wine.
No, but it, no. You keep drinking. Like, it's awesome. I love it. It's like summer Jean. It's summer Jean. But like, this series in particular like highlights what was wrong with everything that happened. Like, the amount of people that were killed, the amount of Indians that were killed. So I think, I'm not saying you would like that because you like the slaughter of Indians, but I'm just saying, like, just because I don't know what's happening, but I'm so distracted.
We're all too drunk right now.
Okay. So I'm gonna wrap this up.
Sounds like a good time, Jackie.
One, this is gonna be real quick. One, if you've never if you like vampire stories, the originals is probably the best TV show I've ever seen for vampire stories.
Where is that at?
On Netflix. What does that look for? I don't know. My work wife just gave me an evil look.
Stacey and Jackie together once again.
So, and two.
Did Jean just take her pants off?
Jean's taking her pants off. So, Stacey.
No, I'm putting my pants back on. I sat here with no pants on the whole time because the fucking wine threw me into a menopausal hot flash.
So, Stacey, Kai, and little Lex and I went and saw Bombshell last night. And I actually feel kind of bad that I drugged them to it. So Bombshell is the true story of what happened with the whole, like, Roger Ailes sexual harassment case with Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson. And I have to say, it was so well done. And there are so many famous women in this movie, like Charlize Theron and Margot Robbie and Nicole Kidman and Kate McKinnon and about 50 others that I can't even name right now off the top of my head. And I was really impressed with it. One, because Gretchen Carlson and Megyn Kelly are obviously still alive and well, so they had input into the series. Two, the kind of inside look of, and I'm sure, I mean, I have my issues with Fox News. I'm sure this isn't only Fox News that has these issues, but I was really impressed that someone had the balls, Lionsgate actually, to put something out so present about a broadcast news station that would probably be detrimental to them. They'd probably lose a lot of supporters after watching this film. It was really well done. If you want to watch Margot Robbie walk around in really tight dresses for like 90 minutes, this is your movie. She also hooks up with Kate McKinnon.
So there.
I don't know.
Is it worth seeing? Because I put that on my list of movies to go see.
It was excellent. It's made by Reese Witherspoon's company. They help produce it and stuff. It was really, really good. It was a little bit of a different take into it. Charlize Theron, they made her look just like Megyn Kelly. Like, you don't even recognize her.
I didn't even know. If you hadn't told me, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you don't know it's her. And it just goes to, it was, again, going back to the Equalizer thing, these conservative women who had finally had enough and stood up and said, no, you're not going to treat me like this, and I deserve more. And it was, like, Kai said afterwards he was really glad that we took Lex, his 16-year-old, to see it because it was important for her to see that.
Yes.
Because they show the progression. Like, they show how these women kind of went in there and were like, oh, is this normal? Like, I don't know how this is supposed to play out. And how they kind of fall into these traps of it just being like a normal day at the office that this kind of shit happens to them because it's happening to everyone. And like he was saying, it was good for her to see how easily it is to kind of fall into a pattern like that. And you shouldn't be treated that way at work or by anyone. So it was an excellent movie. I enjoyed every second of it. I did feel bad about making them go. I didn't actually know that's what it was going to specifically be about when we went and saw it, but I was pleasantly surprised.
We were mad. Lex, the first like 5 minutes, was it Charlize that's talking about like, this is like the level where Fox News works, and this is what's happening with the president. Blah, blah. And Lex looks over at me and is like, I'm going to sleep. Like, what the heck? And
I was but like, the message is so important for Lex, though.
And I was like, I did not dupe you. This is not a political movie. Like, this is like, just whatever. And by the end of the movie, she goes, all right, that was good. Like, she understood. We just went in thinking that it was going to be an action movie with these three, like,
I actually did too. I did.
Star women, and we were like, oh, cool. Like,
I thought it was a political action movie. Honest to God, yeah. I did not intentionally take them to something, but I was pleasantly surprised.
Right, but the message behind it, and once you get into it, it was a good movie. It just wasn't what we were expecting.
Gene, you'd love it.
It's on my list of movies to go see at the theater, and I might fucking go by myself.
Yeah.
I might go by myself.
Aaron, it's no Star Wars, but you'll be entertained.
Aaron, you like it too. Like,
I think everyone should see
it. But I feel like you should see it in the theater because it is very, there's no action and there's no like, oh my God, in the middle. It's kind of like Jax was talking about where the beginning is really exciting and the middle is really exciting, but the middle is kind of, where if I was watching it at home, I probably would have been a little bit bored in the middle. But watching it in the theater where you have nothing else to do or concentrate on, you're like...
And what I thought was really important, one of the things that they highlighted was, like, Megyn Kelly was kind of on the fence about coming forward about Roger. You see these women struggle with, like, will this ruin my career if I come forward? Like, Roger Ailes has all of the power in the world. Will this screw me? And I thought it was important, because they did paint Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson in a pretty good light. I don't know them personally, obviously, so I don't know how much of it is accurate and how much of it is, you know, just their interpretation. But Margot Robbie's character at one point looks at her because she's like the youngest one on staff who just kind of got hired on and is just experiencing the sexual harassment. She looked at Megyn Kelly and was like, because you haven't spoken up for 10 years, this is happening to all of us now. And I thought that was such an interesting kind
chills.
Of. And Megyn Kelly says, you're not my responsibility. Like, you need to take responsibility for yourself. And it was such an interesting way to kind of spin it of how much of the responsibility does fall on the women that came before them.
A lot.
To speak out. But at the sake of what? Because Megyn Kelly wouldn't have been Megyn Kelly had she come out the 10 years prior. It was just an interesting way to... I agree with Margot Robbie's character, but I can also see why Megyn Kelly, as much as I don't personally like her, was like, I was in a space that it was normal 10 years ago. We're in the space of Me Too now, and it's different.
Margot Robbie said, okay, boomer.
Yeah. It was just an interesting way to see, like, the generations interact of how did you let it get this bad?
Because my generation doesn't stand for this shit.
Right. And it was a really kind of pivotal moment of, women aren't going to take this shit anymore from these men. And it doesn't matter what you had to do to get here. We're not going to.
And the thing at the end about how much was paid out.
Oh, yeah. And the thing at the end, which was fascinating, was in total, there was like 36 women or something that Fox News had to pay out for all of the debauchery of Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes. They paid out a total of $55 million. But the severance package of Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly was $65 million. So they actually paid out $10 million more.
Yeah, for these two dudes to fucking walk away.
It was really good. You guys should see it.
You should definitely
it was
see,
really
it.
Good.
Also,
I am going to the movies to see it, no doubt.
Also, keep watching The Morning Show.
We will.
We're going to.
I know you are, but I'm just saying, like,
I'm too far gone.
All right, guys.
Gone.
Happy New Year to everyone.
I'm not far.
Happy New Year.
We'll catch you in 2020.
Thank you for your support.
Thanks for your support. Buy Spellbound. It comes out next week.
Oh my God, Spellbound.
And stay tuned for our special Spellbound weekly wind down edition. People.
Yes.
It's coming.
It's coming. Keep your eyes and your ears peeled.
Fierce Fem Media will be putting out a special sneak peek of Spellbound next week. We'll be putting it on New Year's Day.
Yeah, bitches.
It's going to blow your minds.
And then Gene and I are going to be doing a giveaway shortly after. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Happy New Year.